Good morning. I'd like to call the Senate Finance Committee meeting to order. Today is Friday, April 20th, 2018. The time is 9:12 a.m. I'm Co-Chairman Anna McKinnon. With me this morning, Co-Chairman Hoffman.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Vice Chairman Bishop.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Senator Stevens.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Senator Von Imhoff. Senator Michicki is away on other business. He has a bill up in another committee. Is there anything to come before the committee before we begin? I'd like to direct members' attention to HB 240. It's an act relating to prescription prices available to consumers relating to penalties for certain pharmacy and pharmacist violations relating to registration and duties of pharmacy benefit managers, relating to procedures, guidelines, and enforcement mechanisms for pharmacy audits, relating to the cost of multi-source generic drugs, and insurance reimbursement procedures relating to the duties of the Director of the Division of Insurance and providing for an effective date. I'd like to invite Representative David Guttenberg with his staff, Seth Whiten, to the microphone to introduce the bill before us. Representative Guttenberg, if you would introduce yourself and then tell me what we're trying to fix.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, for the record, Seth Whiten, staff to Representative Guttenberg.
Welcome to Senate Finance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What the bill does is it drives down the cost of prescription drug prices, and it creates a fair, equitable process for pharmacists when they have disagreements with the pharmaceutical drug managers. And it works to make sure that our communities have local pharmacies.
Thank you, sir. Are there questions from committee members about the intent of the bill? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Guttenberg, you know, it's the price of medication that tends to drive, and Alaska has one of the highest health care costs in the state of in the nation. And so as you look at what's going on here, I think it's admirable, but we also have the idea that the pharmaceutical companies are one of the ones that are bearing a fair amount of the cost to go ahead and develop some of these medications that are used worldwide. And so if we continue to be on the frontier of developing drugs, we want to make sure that the drugs that myself and other prescription people have are able to go ahead and give to the patients that we have, especially as we think of things like drug-resistant diseases out there, as well as other metabolic resistant situations that we're in. What's your thought on that concept?
Well, thank you, Senator.
Representative Guttenberg.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson. The whole world of medical delivery in this nation is complex and costly, and Alaska is the most expensive state in the most expensive nation in the world. We want to make sure that everybody can make a living, everybody can get a return on their dollars, and that's important. In many ways, all of us have our contribute to the issue of the rising health care costs, from the patient to the industry and the delivery of health care. The bill focuses on a fair process, and at the pharmaceutical level in the pharmacy, what we're doing, one of the things we're doing is we're taking off what's commonly referred to as a gag order, right? Patient walks up to the pharmacy and he hands them a prescription. Some of the prescription drug managers prevent by contract the pharmacy telling, well, I have it cheaper over here, but I can't tell you that. So we want to remove that restriction from a pharmacist to be able to sell you something that is alternatively is the same thing but less expensive. We really don't, I mean, I don't think you want to go into the whole world of medical delivery, but that, as far as the focus on, that's what one of the things that this bill does.
Senator Olson, if we might do the walkthrough.
Sure.
Mr. Whiten, are you prepared to do a sectional walkthrough for us?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to.
Just if you, please proceed.
For the record, Seth Whiten, staff to Representative Guttenberg. You have a sectional analysis for HB 240 in your bill. We'll start at the beginning, and sections 1 through 4 I'll note, are the only sections that are different from SB 38, which is the companion bill that is sponsored by Senator Giesel. Sections 1 through 4 deal with the gag orders that Representative Guttenberg just referenced. Those sections require that contracts between pharmacy benefit managers and pharmacies cannot prevent a pharmacist from informing a patient if they can obtain their prescriptions at a less costly price through paying outside of their insurance plan. It also establishes that pharmacists are required to inform patients if there is a less costly alternative for them to obtain prescriptions. Section 5 deals with adding a new section to the insurance title in Alaska code. It establishes a section on pharmacy benefit managers, requiring them to register, spelling out audit procedural requirements, spelling out how pharmacy benefit managers deal with overpayment and underpayment to pharmacies. It deals with how pharmacy benefit managers recoup payments in the event that they have overpaid pharmacies. Deals with pharmacy audit reports, sets procedural and timeline guidelines on those reports, things like requiring a pharmacy benefit manager to provide 7 days notice to a pharmacist prior to an audit, things like requiring audit findings to be provided within 120 days. It goes on to deal with fraudulent activity, defines what is fraud, defines fraud as an intentional act of theft or misrepresentation by a pharmacy. It also defines what is not fraud, which are unintentional typographical or clerical errors, and states that those shall not be treated as fraud. It deals with audit restrictions to do with pharmacy benefits managers' audits of pharmacies. It deals with drugs on maximal allowable cost lists and spells out what pharmacy benefit managers need to do in terms of updating those price lists and informing pharmacists of any price change. And then Section 5 goes on to deal with the appeal process and establishes that pharmacy benefit managers must have a written appeal process, and that they must – it also establishes at the end of the appeal process a mechanism for a pharmacy to be able to review unfavorable audit results from a pharmacy benefit manager with the State Division of Insurance. Section 6 deals with applicability. Section 7 deals with granting the Division of Insurance authority for adopting regulations necessary to implement the legislation. Section 8 deals with revisor's instructions. Section 9 and Section 10 are the sections that deal with the effective date clauses of the bill.
Thank you for that broad sectional analysis. First, I'd like to remind the committee that we did hear this bill before. This is another bill that we did have a thorough sectional analysis by title that pointed to each concept. That was when Senator Giesel was before us earlier. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you help us understand, though we've heard about it before, the gag clause, why it exists, who enforces it?
Thank you.
If we could point to the page number that this section that directs the title, that would be helpful.
Certainly, I'd be happy to. For the record, Seth Witten, staff to Representative Guttenberg. Through the chair, Senator Stevens, pages 1 and 2 are sections 1 through 4 that deal with the gag clauses. As you see on section 1, the first provision there is that no contract may be made between a PBM and a pharmacist, which has a gag clause. Those gag clauses, there are PBMs that have them. There are PBMs that don't. My understanding from the pharmacists, and we do have pharmacists available for questions as well, is that they deal with very many PBMs, and some may have these gag clauses, some may not, but it creates a complicated environment for them when a patient comes to the counter and says, I need my prescription, because then they're trying to determine, okay, which PBM is this plan contracted through, and is there a gag clause or isn't there? And so the intention of this provision is to simplify the pharmacist's procedures and to allow the patient to get the lowest cost for their prescription.
Mr. Witten, if I could, currently the pharmacy benefit managers engage in contracts with individual pharmacists. Is that accurate?
That's correct.
Mr. Witten, when they engage in those contracts, some of the contracts have stipulations about being able to identify where the PBM finds the lowest cost. Is that accurate?
That is correct.
Mr. Witten, is it accurate that right now, because of that contract, this proposed piece of legislation is asking for the ability to disclose if the pharmacist knows there's a lower price available, that they can tell the recipient they can access the lower cost?
That's correct. And Madam Chair, essentially what the bill is doing is saying if a patient can achieve a lower cost through paying outside of their insurance, that a pharmacist would notify them of that information.
Senator Stevens, follow up.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, that's what I was trying to get at. So this is a contractual arrangement between the pharmacy and the PBM. It's something they agree to, and it's a legal issue they have to follow.
Through the Chair, Senator Stevens, it is a contractual issue between the pharmacy benefit manager and the PBM, and I will let the pharmacist speak to the nature of their contracts with the PBMs, but what I will say is I've heard from very many pharmacists that those contracts are take it or leave it. They're not able to negotiate whether they would be able to divulge that information to a patient or not.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And if I may, the bill as implemented would not negate the contract. It would just prevent the next one being negotiated from having that clause.
And I am sure that we'll have pharmaceutical benefit managers tell us why that might be necessary from their perspective. So, Senator Olson, we do have 20 people waiting online to testify, and it would be helpful if, because we've heard this bill before, if we could try to get to some of that public testimony, if not all of it today.
The only question I have, Madam Chair, has to do with Senator Stevens actually asked who enforces this, the gag order. And we can cover that later if you'd like, but it was a question I want to have answered as well.
Senator Olson, I think that that's a question for the pharmacy benefit manager as well as our Division of Insurance. But Representative Guttenberg, do you have, can you answer Senator Olson's question?
Well, as far as the gag order, it's a contractual relationship between the pharmacist and the PBM, and I guess that's where the state doesn't enforce it. That's where it is, where there'd be a civil between two parties, basically contractual law.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Olson, we'll re-ask that question with others in front of us. Senator Von Imhoff, did you have a question?
A small one. Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Representative Guttenberg, on page 4, starting on line 18, section F there, a pharmacy benefits manager shall audit each pharmacy under the same standards and parameters as other similarly situated pharmacies in a network of pharmacy contract in the state. So, just so where might we find those standards and parameters, just so everyone knows what to expect on both sides of the issue, because it doesn't look like it's obviously not spelled out in the statute, but it's got to be somewhere, regulations or?
Right. Through the Chair, Senator Von Imhoff, and I will defer to the Division of Insurance and pharmacists, but my understanding is that those contracts are confidential. And so in terms of what the terms of those contracts are and whether they are uniform among similarly situated pharmacies is a question that we're not able to answer because of the confidential nature of those contracts. That provision, I will note, is similar to law that has been passed in many other states and is the same as a bill that passed this body in 2012.
Senator Von Imhoff, will you hold that question and ask it again? Thank you for presenting.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
House Bill 240. With that, we do have invited testimony this morning. I'm going to open the public hearing. On House Bill 240, an act relating to prescription prices, pharmacies, and I've read all the other titles. The first person of invited testimony is Barry Christensen, Island Pharmacy, Ketchikan. Mr. Christensen, are you there?
I am. Thank you, Madam Chair, Senator McKinnon, and members of the Finance Committee. For the record, my name is Barry Christensen, and I am a second-generation practicing pharmacist in Ketchikan. I'm fortunate to be practicing in our family pharmacy with my dad, who was the 67th pharmacist to be registered in the state. Additionally, I have a daughter who is in her second year of pharmacy school. My individual testimony for our pharmacy can be found in your packet. Today, I'm representing the Alaska Pharmacists Association, for which I am currently serving as a legislative co-chair. Our association is made up of pharmacies, pharmacists, and pharmacy technicians across our great state. The bill before you today is our association's number one legislative priority. In fact, it has been for about the last 10 years. A version of this bill passed this committee and the Senate previously, but died on the House side. During the 10 years we've been working on this legislation, we have seen a nearly 25% decrease in the number of independently owned community pharmacies. And while there have been multiple factors influencing the closures and sales of these pharmacies, our association believes that the prescription benefit managers, PBMs, have played a large role in their demise. As I was thinking about today's meeting and reflecting back on the 10 years I spent working on this legislation that you have before you today, I and other association members have met with the PBM industries in Juneau to try and, quote, negotiate the language that is agreeable to all sides. We learned early on that this was not obtainable and only delayed the bill from being deliberated in the legislature. Why is this? I'll briefly try to explain. First, in your packet, you have a partial listing of the numerous PBMs that are currently or have been operating in our state. Since they are not required to be licensed, we don't have an accurate number. However, that would be corrected with the passage of this legislation. Across the board, all these PBMs have different contract terms with individual pharmacies, and as you have heard in presentations earlier, they are take-it-or-leave-it contracts. Pharmacies can't do business unless they sign the contract. During testimony in the House, we heard how different some of the contractual language is among the PBMs. Here are two examples that will be standardized in this bill. First, a 10-day notice on on-site pharmacy audits. You have letters in your packet stating that the industry association represented PBMs opposed such notice. Yet, in testimony earlier this month in the House Finance, a spokesman for one of the largest PBMs said they have no problem with that notice. Secondly, prescription mailings to rural residents. Some PBMs restrict Alaska pharmacies from mailing prescriptions to patients. However, others have gone on record to say they have no such restrictions. If the industry has a revolving door of policy, how could we come up with agreeable language? Imagine the plight of the small community pharmacists expected to keep track of these varying business practices. That is why we are asking for your help today to establish some guidelines within our profession and industry. This bill does represent a compromise that we have negotiated in good faith with the state administration to address their concerns, and this bill reflects those changes. As you have previously seen and heard during the earlier presentation, we are one of the last states to adopt such standards, and our member pharmacies are suffering at this time, per their testimonials and letters in your packet. Thank you for hearing this bill today. We ask for your support, and I'll be available to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Christensen. Questions from committee members? The next invited testimony from the sponsor is Leif Holm.
Hi, thank you. My name is Leif Holm, for the record, from North Pole. I want to thank you to the chairs for hearing the bill and, again, making this a priority, as it's been for us, as Barry said, as pharmacists for the last 10 years. I'm also a second-generation pharmacist and owner of four independent pharmacies in the interior, including the first independently owned telepharmacy in the state, located in a medically underserved community. We are, as Barry kind of alluded to, we're in a hostile environment right now where anything goes about how a PBM wants to treat us, whether it involves contract negotiations or lack thereof. audits or the way we're reimbursed, all the way up to micromanaging whether or not we can mail a patient within the state their prescription. To enforce a few points, this bill, it does not eliminate audits or force PBMs to reimburse or stop them from mailing it to the state themselves. It helps to create a fair playing field to where there are guidelines to follow for auditing procedures to prevent witch hunts against pharmacies for clerical errors or purposely catch us off guard when we're already in most cases short-staffed as is and have a difficult time complying with demands while trying to keep the doors open. I personally just had an audit that gave me 30 days to complete, which was rather generous. However, being short-staffed, largely due to reimbursement issues that are just so terrible, I can't afford extra help. At this particular location, I've increased almost 1,000 prescriptions on the year, which is, in our business, that's pretty good. We're doing what we can to make a business thrive, but we're making less money. We're doing more work for less and have no control or negotiation power with the PBMs to change that. This bill is going to allow for a fair MAC playing field with regards to PBMs, keeping up to date with market prices that we actually see in Alaska and giving us a fair chance at, dare I say, winning an appeal for a negative reimbursement, which encompasses almost 20% of my claims in the fourth quarter last year. The bill will also allow us to take care of our patients that prefer to use our services that maybe can't physically make it into the pharmacy, so we would be able to mail those prescriptions to them without fear of losing our contracts to service the entire community, as Barry alluded to. This could potentially save money for payers also due to the many studies that show PBM mail order pharmacies the most wasteful form of prescription dispensing. So without help in these areas, we're going to continue to lose ground in the fight to provide health care within the state. And I have what I would call delusions at this point of starting more telepharmacies in the state to help more underserved populations that mail order pharmacy just can't touch, but am currently in danger of being forced out of the one I started just a year ago and desperately trying to keep my other three afloat in part due to the strategies the PBMs implement. So as an Alaskan pharmacist running an Alaskan business for Alaskans, I again appreciate your time and service and implore you to put a kink in the armor of the PBMs and help us to continue to provide personal health care to our communities. I thank you, and I'm available for questions as well.
Are there questions from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, I did contact the PBMs and wanted to provide an opportunity for those with a different perspective than is in the bill before us to have their opportunity under invited testimony to be heard. I'd like to invite Cindy Labatcher from Express Scripts to the microphone. Welcome to Senate Finance. Your name for the record, affiliation, and then please proceed with your testimony. I've allowed 15 minutes for opposition at the front of the general public hearing.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Co-Chair McKinnon, Co-Chair Hoffman, and members of the committee, my name is Cindy Laubacher. I'm Senior Director of State Government Affairs for Express Scripts. Thank you for the opportunity to present and speak to the committee today with respect to this bill. Let me begin with just a bit of a level set about what PBMs do and who we are. So PBMs are healthcare companies that perform pharmacy benefit management services. Our clients include health plans, labor unions, large employers, state employee plans, the entire realm. They hire us to manage the prescription drug portion of their healthcare benefit. We under that contract, which, let me be clear, when their contracts are, they set forth absolutely everything that we do. They control and dictate every part of what we do, from audits and MACs and, you know, formularies, everything. So that is all dictated by our clients. We perform a variety of services based on those requirements by each client. At the last hearing, Senator Giesel and her staff presented a PBM 101, and I'd like to take a moment just to clarify a few points that were in that PBM 101. First off, they stated that PBMs are virtually unregulated. We are absolutely regulated. We are indirectly regulated through our health plan contract. So to the extent that the Division of Insurance or the code has formulary requirements, mandates, certain, you know, chemoparity, all those kinds of things. We are responsible for being compliant with those on behalf of our clients. So we are regulated through those health plan clients. We're regulated as a our pharmacies, our mail order pharmacies are regulated through the Board of Pharmacy. We hold a pharmacy license with the Alaska Board of Pharmacy and are subject to all of the rules and regulations there. We are regulated under Medicare and Medicaid by CMS for all of the parts of the business that we provide for through those programs. So we are indeed regulated. A second point in the presentation was that, quote, PBMs have free rein to dictate what pharmacies are permitted to do in a given network, driving patients to particular pharmacy options. Again, our clients determine what their networks look like. Our clients, whether it's a health plan or a labor trust or whomever, will come to us, will, as part of the RFP or a part of discussions throughout the year, will come to us and say, we want the network to look like this. We want a network that has every community pharmacist in the state and one chain. We want that chain to be chain A. We want, and it can go any number of ways. That happens regularly. Again, they dictate who we, what that network looked like. They also dictate whether or not they use mail, our in-house mail service, how we use it, how members are to use it, whether it's optional or it has to be, they need to move to mail after three fills or what have you. It is all dictated by the client, not the PBM. Finally, and somewhat related, PBMs, the presentation stated that PBMs can mandate beneficiaries to use PBM mail order. That's absolutely untrue. We do not control, again, that benefit. That benefit is controlled by our clients. They make that determination. Earlier this year in February, I met with Representative Guttenberg and talked about PBMs and offered to come to the table and suggested a stakeholder meeting. I did participate in the last one that we had several years back. We had one meeting. I've been doing this for 15 years. We have one meeting, and we never heard back. And that's not to say we're not open to it. As you've heard, there are these bills across the country. I have negotiated many of them. We are absolutely always ready, willing, and able to sit down and talk to folks. And that is normally how these laws come together. We sit down and talk about what are your issues, what are our issues, let's look at the language, how does that fit, and then we ultimately come up with a piece of legislation. We do not, let me be clear about one thing, and I do believe I speak on behalf of the industry here. PBMs do not have a problem with enactment of reasonable standards for pharmacy audits or MAC appeals. That's why the stakeholder process is so important and can be so incredibly helpful to work through concerns for both sides. In that spirit, I'll highlight some of our primary concerns with the bill. Section 1, with regard to clawback, which has been the point of some conversation this morning, we absolutely don't oppose that. We do have language that we would offer instead of the language in the bill, and this is language that we have enacted, I helped draft, in other states. The concern with how it's drafted is that it allows the bill in its current form allows pharmacies to tell a patient if a lower-cost alternative drug is available. When pharmacies offer alternative drugs, they need to be talking first with there's a reason for that, and it's typically, it could be price-related, but they need to talk to the doctor first. What we understand the issue to be is that when a patient comes in with a prescription for Lipitor and the copay is $20, and the pharmacist wants to be able to say, hey, you know what? My cash price for that is 10. It's less than your copay. We agree that, and in fact, Express Scripts requires pharmacies to tell patients that and to charge the lesser of copay. So what we are saying, our language says is pharmacies can tell patients if the price, cash price at the pharmacy is less than their copay. Our language also prohibits plans and PBMs from penalizing a pharmacy for doing, sharing that information. But thirdly, our language ensures that that payment, whether it's the $5 cash or the $10 copay, counts against the patient's deductible. So one of the things you heard this morning is that they should be able to pay outside the benefit. That's not in anyone's benefit, especially not in the benefit of patients. Patients, if they're paying $10 or $100 or whatever that cash price might be, you want that counting against their deductible, because otherwise they're going to be sort of, they're going to be paying money that they don't need to be paying to get catch up to that deductible at some point. So those are the three parts of the, if we were to write the, sit down and talk and write that bill, that would be the three parts we would be looking for. And we do have language we'd be happy to share with the committee that achieves these goals. The issue of registration. We're a little unsure about what the requirement is. We've heard that in part it's to, so that the state knows how, you know, who, which PBMs are operating in the state. I would tell you that one, Express Scripts already is a TPA in this state. Two, the Division of Insurance already has jurisdiction over our, the pharmacy benefit through their insured plans, their, through their regulation of the insured plans, and they have the ability to enforce those requirements on those plans. Again, we are, through our contracts, we can't do anything that would bring our client in this state out of compliance with Alaska law. Audits. Again, we are not opposed at all to a fair and reasonable audit bill. I've negotiated these across the country. And we, when we met some years ago, there were several parts that we did not agree on, some parts we did. And in this bill, there are parts we are fine with. The 10-day notice, we are okay with. We think there are some just, they're really almost more technical in nature. But it, I think if we could spend literally an hour talking about it, we could work through just, it's, there's just some drafting issues, but they're important drafting issues. For example, one, there's a definition of fraudulent activity on page 6, lines 13 through 18. That is not in any other audit bill in this country. It's not to say that fraud isn't addressed in those bills. It is. Absolutely. And, in fact, the, there's another section of this bill that actually speaks to the fact that none of this applies if there's suspected fraud, and we fully support that. The problem is there, the language kind of mixes up some issues around clerical errors being fraud, and clerical errors are really an issue about recoupment. And so, again, it's more, I think it's more of a drafting issue, and I think it's something that we could easily work through. The issue of extrapolation. So what you've heard and seen in testimony, it talks to the fact that they may, someone may come in and do an audit and find $100 worth of overpayments, and then they extrapolate that out and charge the pharmacy $10,000. We do not do that. I do not know of any PBM that does that. So I would say we don't have a problem with that part of the language. That said, I think it's incredibly important that the committee understand and that the pharmacists understand this bill is not going to apply to federal programs. The people doing extrapolation are Medicaid. Medicaid's going to continue to extrapolate. Federal programs, they do use extrapolation. So there, well, that does occur. It's just not by us.
Ms. Lebeck, that is, that's 10 minutes. I just wanted to give you that. That's what's going off so that
thank you.
You understand what's happening.
Thank you. Thanks. I appreciate that. I'm almost done. And then thirdly, there's an issue with there's some language in there that directs how payments for audits are occur. Again, how we are paid for the audits that we conduct on behalf of our clients and at the, I should say very clearly, the direction of our clients, that is up to our clients to determine. And so we would object to language that prohibits or sets limitations on how our clients determine how best to cover the costs for the audits that they require us to do. Again, those are just some highlights. I think the most contentious part of the bill and most concerning to us has to do with the MAC portion. It's what you've heard, you'll hear a lot about and you have heard a lot about. Let me start with MAC, what MAC is. MAC is how pharmacies are reimbursed for generic prescriptions that they dispense. MAC was created by the federal government under the Medicaid program because they were in an attempt to deal with skyrocketing pharmacy costs that they were seeing. So they came up with this process for figuring out what should a pharmacy, large, medium, small, wherever in the country, what should they be able to buy that drug for? And that's what sets MAC. The bill, and our concern with the bill, is that it takes reimbursement decisions and hands them over to the Division of Insurance. And that's a huge concern for us. There, as written in the bill, the pharmacies, the division would accept, be able to accept appeals and claims, and then review them, and then make determinations as to whether those, whether a change in that reimbursement should occur. That is no small feat. I am very confused, I have to admit, how there's no fiscal note on this. A similar and much more limited version of this passed in Washington State, and the cost to that program, the fiscal note for the first 2 years was $847,000, and for the out years was $746,000. It's a huge, complicated process to do this, and the state of Washington has set up a whole system, and again, it's limited to small pharmacies. Your bill is not. Your bill allows Costco. And so the idea under this bill, you're taking a part of the insurance code that is for insurers and probably doesn't get used very much and saying, we're going to overlay MAC appeals into this system. Quasi-judicial, by definition in the statute. Hearings, witnesses, da-da-da. It is as written in this bill, is hugely problematic and will be hugely costly and complicated. The department's going to need a division's going to need a method to accept those appeals, review those appeals, make decisions on those appeals. That's going to be staffing. It's going to be time. So, again, you know, we have appeals processes. We are happy to sit down and talk about creating an appeals process in statute that makes sense, that is fair for everyone. But we would say that handing the state the authority to taking that authority away from our clients and giving it to the state to make reimbursement decisions is hugely problematic for us and for our clients. Finally, the language in the bill doesn't even contain any confidentiality provisions. So we would be required to provide very highly proprietary MAC lists to pharmacies, which we are happy to do and do on a regular basis, but there's no attendant confidentiality. Those are highly proprietary, and we cannot have pharmacies sharing their MAC lists. So that would be one of the examples of problems within the bill. MAC laws are typically, take a great deal of time and energy to negotiate, and we're happy to do it, done it a lot, but we want to get it right. I'll close with this. Community pharmacies are a critical component of the benefit we provide to our clients. They are also of critical importance to our clients. There is not a client out there that does not want independent community pharmacies in their networks. So 85 to 90% of the drugs that are dispensed in this country through my company's benefit, in fact, are dispensed through community pharmacies. This is there. We are not looking to put them out of business. We don't want them to go out of business. We do want to work with them on a fair and reasonable solution to this bill. And with that, I'll thank the committee and be happy to answer questions.
First, is it Laubacher?
Laubacher.
Laubacher, thank you. Ms. Laubacher, it appears you were reading from written testimony. Could we get a copy of that?
They're kind of written notes, but I'd be happy to put them in a format for the committee.
Thank you. Are there questions from committee members? Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Welcome to Senate Finance. Can you give me just real encapsulated? I have two questions. I want to be respectful of the chair's time trying to manage this committee this morning. But Express Scripts, are you a nationwide affiliation?
Through the chair, yes, sir. We are a national company.
In these 34 other states that this some semblance of a law has been passed, has it hurt your bottom line, and has it improved and made the hometown pharmacy better?
Through the chair, I would say on the issue of audits, I think it has, the laws that we have negotiated have taken a lot of the questions and concerns out of the process for pharmacies, and that's always good, so that when our auditors are going into community pharmacies, chain, whatever kind of pharmacy, there's a clearer understanding as to what it is, what the time frames are that we're coming, what's going to be required. The bill does have limits on the number of prescriptions that we can look at. That's fine. So in that regard, I would say I would hope that that has made life a little bit easier. I will again reiterate, a lot of the problems that I have heard and read in the testimony appear to relate primarily to Medicaid audits. That's where extrapolation comes. You can't limit how many scripts they look at. Those are the ones that tend to drive the most work, I would estimate, for local pharmacies. As for MAC, I don't know that that's made anybody's life. The MAC laws have made anybody's life much easier. In terms of MAC lists being provided, I think that's been good for pharmacies, understanding having a standard appeals process, time frames, those things, that's a good thing. The issue of having departments of insurance or divisions of insurance review appeals, I think that's been problematic for both sides, confusing. What we have found in the state of Washington is that all of our appeals have been upheld, and that's because all of the appeals being filed with the state, and I again speak only for Express Scripts, have been for claims that are outside the jurisdiction of the state. So I think that one of the problems we have seen as these bills have been enacted is a level of confusion within the community pharmacy community as to which medications, which scripts are subject to the law and which ones are not, and they are simply appealing everything and waiting to see what comes back. That's been our experience.
Thank you, Ms. Laubeck. I just advised the committee that we do have Alaskans waiting to testify on this issue also. Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. This is a new industry for me, so I'm trying to get up to speed as quickly as possible listening to your testimony. So in regards to the MAC list, you identified that as being a hot topic. You said the language in the bill does not address confidentiality of the MAC list. So I wrote, don't want pharmacies sharing lists. So why aren't MAC lists standard? Are you saying that you negotiate, like, the price of Lipitor that you used earlier with each individual pharmacy, so you may reimburse any pharmacy a different amount for Lipitor? Why? How come it's not standard across the state? I don't understand.
Through the chair,
Ms. Laubach.
There's kind of no easy way to explain MAC lists, so that I apologize. So our clients are always trying to, every client is driving to different goals. So yes, pharmacies are dealing with multiple MAC lists. Primera may have, we may have 15 MAC lists for Primera, for, one for each line of business. The state of Alaska has a MAC list, but health plans who sell their products to multiple businesses, they're all working toward different goals. And so, yes, there are the MAC lists vary based on on who the client is and what it is that they are looking for. And so so that pricing and how that pricing is developed is a highly proprietary system, and so we cannot have collusion, that open the door for collusion by having pharmacies being able to compare pharmacy A and pharmacy B having a conversation about what they're being reimbursed for Lipitor, because again they're being, or atorvastatin, it's the generic, because they're also working they're talking about different clients potentially. You're talking about different, you're solving to, they're solving to, those MAC lists are solving to different things. So yes, it is confusing, but that's why there's a difference. But it allowing sharing of those MAC list prices would create huge conflicts of interest and potential for collusion, which would be problematic.
Slotbach, are you in favor of the bill before us or in opposition?
I am in support of trying. Given the late date that we're at, I would be more than happy to sit down and talk with the committee, with the pharmacists about this bill. We have serious concerns with it as it's drafted. I don't want to say that we're wholly opposed. We are opposed certainly to the division of insurance provision in the MAC. The rest of it, I think, is very negotiable. I think we could work out the gag clause and audit stuff, I think, rather quickly. I think the MAC thing, I would commit to working throughout the and registration. I would say we'd be committed to working through the summer and bringing you a bill that everybody agrees to next January.
Ms. Laubeck, if you would submit the language changes to my office prior to noon today, we certainly will take it under consideration. With that, I'd like to move on to others. Senator Olson.
I just have one question. It's very simple. What if this bill passes, what's the potential impact to the cost of the end payer?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, the potential impact will primarily occur through the MAC portion of the bill, and that is because it allows pharmacies to file their reimbursement objections or appeals with the Division of Insurance, and then gives the Division of Insurance sole authority, wholesale authority, to make a decision about what that reimbursement should be, and that takes that.
No questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Machiki, briefly.
Madam Chair, I was going to let it go. Ms. Laubacher, thank you for your testimony this morning. I have heard the industry, and I've noticed that it's a sort of operating method used across the country. When it looks serious that PBMs are going to be regulated responsibly, that the industry shows up and says that they're willing to work side by side with lawmakers, and it doesn't happen. What I see is that you try to kill these bills each time, and if the industry was serious, this would have happened a decade ago, where you would have sat down and negotiated. That's just my opinion. But it's a common theme. I heard your testimony and I appreciate it this morning. But I also know that in our state, I'm not sure that we have not understood the struggle of the independent pharmacist on these practices. They're common throughout the country. I think folks are regulating responsibly, and I think the vast majority of this bill is a solid approach that I don't think in any way compromises the ability for PBMs to do what they do, yet for independent pharmacists to make a living without being squeezed. So my primary statement was I wish you would have taken that seriously at least the last time this came up 2 years ago and spent the time with lawmakers and independent pharmacists to find a solution that you felt was a better product.
Ms. Laubeck, thank you for coming to Senate Finance. Again, if you could get the language for our consideration to us before noon today, that will be helpful.
Thank you.
Thank you. With that, Bill Head, Pharmaceutical Care Management Association from California. Mr. Head, welcome to Senate Finance.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Bill Head. I'm the Senior Director of State Government Affairs for PCMA. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to the committee today. And I'll be brief. I'll just echo some of Ms. Laubacher's comments that we are committed to working with you and stakeholders to find a solution to this. And Ms. Laubacher actually has specific language to share on GI clauses and on audits. PCMA is on the record opposing gag clauses. We work with several other states on language doing that, and we want to do it with Alaska. The pharmacists are partners, and unfortunately we've gotten to a point where we've become, it's been more antagonistic than it should be and needs to be. So I'll just conclude with saying we stand ready to work with you and work with stakeholders. We would like to see something pass this session on GAG and on audit, and then commit to working over the summer on the other issues. And with that, I'll just answer any questions.
Mr. Head, thank you for calling in to Senate Finance. Any questions from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, the next person waiting to testify is Richard Holt, the chair of the Alaska Board of Pharmacy. Welcome to Senate Finance, Mr. Holt.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members, and thank you for hearing this bill today. For the record, my name is Richard Holt. I'm not only the chair of the Alaska Board of Pharmacy, I'm also a constituent and live in wonderful Eagle River, and I'm also a licensed pharmacist in the state. I'm here today to provide testimony as chair of the Board of Pharmacy, and we are in support of this bill. Our purpose as a board is to promote, preserve, and protect the public health, safety, and welfare by and through the effective control and regulation of the practice of pharmacy. And so we have heard from the Alaska Pharmacists Association, as you heard from Barry Christensen, it's made up of licensees of pharmacists, technicians, and pharmacies, and the issues that they have, which could dramatically impact access to pharmacy for the patients here in Alaska. And so we support this bill. We realize that given our geographical and logistical challenges, that our patients have to have access in these very small, remote areas just as much as they do in the larger cities. And pharmacy is a very complicated field. We see pharmacies closing in Alaska, and we want to preserve our pharmacies the best that we can as a profession. I mean, just recently, we saw the Sam's Club close all of their Sam's Club here in Alaska, and so there's three pharmacies left, and Walmart closed a pharmacy and store in Juneau. And so as pharmacy gets more tight, we certainly need to make sure that our pharmacies are preserved so that our patients have access to good quality health care, whether you're in Fairbanks, Anchorage, or in Ketchikan or Kowak. So we support this bill. We hope and urge you to support this bill as well and help our licensees in Alaska maintain pharmaceutical care for our patients. And with that, I'm available for any questions and appreciate your time today.
Mr. Holt, we do have a question. Senator Stevens.
Just a quick question, Mr. Holt, just to make sure I understand this. Your organization represents both independent pharmacies as well as the larger Walmart, Costco type thing?
That's correct. Through the chair, Senator Olson, yes. Our licensees would be all pharmacies. It's not specific to independent or chain or grocery store or any of them.
And Senator Olson, thanks you.
Thank you.
Sorry, Senator.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. Thank you, Mr. Holt. Brief at ease. We're back on the record. The next person waiting to testify is Sue Sagerman from Seldotna. Sue, welcome to Senate Finance.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
We can.
Okay. Hold on one sec here. I'm speaking from Seldotna, where I have worked at an independent pharmacy for over 11 years. I'm a pharmacy technician, not a pharmacist. And I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today. I believe that House Bill 240 is very necessary in placing some checks and balances on pharmacy the benefit managers, excuse me. And I believe that this bill's a really good first step in putting some simple boundaries around who and how the pharmacy benefit managers can operate in our state. I can tell you that living in a small community like Soldotna, the independent pharmacy is just a great benefit to the community, and I'm afraid that if we don't have these checks and balances that we're going to lose some of these independent pharmacies. And that's really all I have to say. I urge you to support House Bill 240 today, and I thank you for your time and for allowing me to speak on this.
Ms. Singerman, thank you for calling into Senate Finance. We appreciate your testimony. I'm going to come into the room for in Juneau and try to alternate between off-net and on-net. First in Juneau is Michelle Vaughn, Alaska Pharmacy Association. Michelle, if you would state your name for the record, any association, and then please present your testimony. I'd also like to invite Scott Watts to the second microphone to be prepared to testify. Ms. Vaughn, welcome to Senate Finance.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair, and thank you to the committee. My name is Michelle Vaughn, for the record. I am the current Alaska Pharmacists Association president. Our organization represents over 250 pharmacists and pharmacy technicians across the state. Our members live and work in every geographic area of our state and in all practice sites, including community pharmacy, independent hospital, native, every practice site. Our organization is strongly in support of this bill. As Mr. Christensen allayed earlier, we've been working on this for a really long time, and it's very important for our profession. We have a total of 84 pharmacies in the state of Alaska. 26 of those are independents, 64 are chains. This bill affects all of those, and especially the independents. The independent pharmacies have really been squeezed by PBMs. This is not just an issue here in Alaska, but an issue nationally. You can certainly look into that. What this bill does is just create an even playing field for those independent pharmacies who are feeling strong-armed by these so-called contracts that are, as was mentioned before, essentially take-it-or-leave-it mandates from these PBMs. Just to speak really briefly to the PBM testimony earlier, she was concerned about the Division of Insurance being involved, and I would just say that I think this bill, all it does is allow a mechanism by which the state can intervene if needed, because as of now, there's no regulation whatsoever on these companies. And we would like to join the other 46 states who have already passed reasonable legislation for regulation of this industry. So in closing, I would just like to say that our organization strongly, strongly supports this bill. We really thank you for hearing it. Thank you for hearing our testimony. And I'd be glad to answer questions.
Ms. Vaughn, I have a question regarding the issue of confidentiality. It was raised earlier that inside of the bill, there's an assertion that the data that would be communicated would not be used appropriately. Can you speak to that at all?
Madam Chair, I believe what she was referring to was to the proprietary pricing by which each contract is proprietary. And I believe their concern was that information would be shared amongst pharmacies. I would defer probably to Barry Christensen. He could probably answer that question more in detail than I can, if he's available.
Mr. Christensen?
Yeah, thank you. For the record, Barry Christensen, Alaska Pharmacists Association, legislative co-chair. I think the idea that pharmacies would be sharing MAC lists is kind of irrelevant. All we want is to get paid a price that's basically what we're paying for the drug, and in a lot of instances it's not. You'll hear testimony about that. So this idea that pharmacies are going to share MAC lists as a negotiating arm, the bill really doesn't address that, really. I mean, that's not the intent of the bill, obviously. So I'm kind of baffled by why it was brought up, quite frankly. Because, again, those lists are proprietary, and we've had basically no discussion of that item. I hope that helps.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we heard from a testifier from Express Scripts. Everything in the contract is dictated by the client, and clients dictate whether, you know, whether mail can be included, what network should look like, et cetera. And then your statement was it's a take-it-or-leave-it contract. So I think that the question is when you say dictated by the client, or when the previous speaker, a few speakers ago, is the client, you're not necessarily the client. It's the insurance company, it's the state health care trust. Could you please be a little bit more clear? Because I'm hearing in my notes conflicting information. Thank you.
Through the chair, thank you. I believe that she is, I would go out on a limb and say maybe a little disingenuous with that statement. She, I think, is saying that PBM's contract with individual health plans, so for example, the state of Alaska insures their employees and they contract with a PBM to then manage that pharmacy benefit. But the state of Alaska doesn't go to the PBM and say, you know, they can set whatever, you know, they can have it look however they want, but they rely on the PBM to set it up. They rely on the PBM to create the contract. And so I think it's a little disingenuous to say, well, the person in entering into this contract could choose to let their employees use mail order, or they could choose to let their employees go to this pharmacy. They rely on the PBM to set up those details. So I believe it's a little disingenuous to state that the health plans or the people contracting those health plans could make those choices, if that makes sense.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
The next person in Juneau to testify is Scott Witz. If I could invite Barbara Huff to the microphone. Scott, your testimony.
Okay. Hi, good morning. Thank you. For the record, my name is Scott Watts. I'm a pharmacist and Juneau resident for the last 28 years. Currently own Ron's Apothecary and Foodland Pharmacy here in Juneau that employs 15 people living and working here in Juneau. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee for hearing this bill, and for Representative Guttenberg and Senator Giesel for bringing this to us. I'm going to skip over the audit portions that's been talked about. We'll just briefly touch on the mailing of prescriptions. We can fill a prescription for a client or a customer here in town. As soon as they move or go back home to Gustavus, that same prescription, under certain plans, we're unable to send that out to them. Same prescription, same contract, but just unable because they're back at their home. I'm going to jump to the MAC pricing, and that's been what is a real concern right now. As you've heard, I know our pharmacies and many other pharmacies in the state, we don't have the time or the money or the blood to continue losing money on these MAC prices. MAC prices are needed in the environment, especially when there's several different manufacturers for one medication. But the problem is when that MAC price is set below what is attainable within the marketplace, we end up subsidizing the healthcare losing money on that prescription. We need an appropriate appeals process, and right now we do not have that appropriate appeals process. Excuse me. A quick example is with the state insurance plan, beginning in October, we, along with pharmacies across the state and country, noticed severe reductions in those MAC prices. We met with the Department of Administration, with the state here in November, end of November, and they heard us and tried to talk with the PBM to correct some of this. Nothing was happened immediately, and that's why I take a little exception to some of the previous point about the PBM is dictated by the client. In this situation, it was not. The PBM was operating on their own in that MAC price situation. I also had communications with the insurer, Aetna, about this situation. Again, every day we were losing dollars on these prescriptions and needed to come to some appeals process. Finally, on January 18th, we received a notification from the insurer stating that for 1,500 generic products, the MAC pricing had been adjusted. So that wasn't due to price increases. That was their evaluation of the MAC pricing, and they had readjusted that. But they did not go back in time. For 2.5 months, we were losing money on these MAC prices, on these MAC lists, and they did not go back. Going forward, it was improve somewhat. Outreach call from CVS, from the PBM, to me about the status of these MAC pricings, and I explained the issue of MAC prices not changing on the appeals. And I was told that when asking how that could be purchased in the state, I was told that that is only allowed to pharmacies in states that have that law on the books. How I wish I could have told her that we have House Bill 240 on the books. They will not operate fairly without these laws on the books. Thank you for your time.
Senator Von Imhoff, briefly.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Watts. So the question that I have for you is, you said that sometimes the reimbursement is below of what we can buy it in the marketplace. So when you're buying Lipitor again, how many wholesalers do you have as an option to buy Lipitor? How many choices do you have? How often do you buy the drugs? How do you negotiate from the wholesaler as you're buying Lipitor and or whatever drug? I'm not a pharmacist. And if you're, let's say, a really bad negotiator and you pay $100 for a drug because you don't know any better, is that really the PBM's fault to pay you less because you don't know how to negotiate? And this is, I'm being tongue-in-cheek here a little bit, okay?
Right. Through the chair, Senator, good question. We operate with one major wholesaler. There's three major wholesalers in the country, and so we have a contract with one major wholesaler, AmerisourceBergen. That is our prime wholesaler. If the price is above what the MAC price is, then we have many, many secondary wholesalers. Those are, I don't have a number, but they're available. They call on us daily. We get calls. Blue light specials of this drug, whatever it is. So we have access. And so when I get these claims that are under cost, I reach out to all of these. And many times there's a $50 difference or more, significant numbers that I just cannot imagine that being available from one of those wholesalers, that big of a difference when all of them that I've tried. And to your comment, I totally agree. I do not want to be the one buying that drug for a higher cost and I do not expect to be reimbursed at that higher cost if it is available in the state. Is all we're asking in this appeals process that they need to show that is available at those unrealistic, unattainable prices that they've given us.
Point of clarification, Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
That was $50 per pill?
Through the chair, that was per prescription, and that's a prime example. I do have some numbers from October to December for one PBM that we submitted to, and this is a commercial plan. It's not a Medicaid or a federal plan. We had claims totaling $12,542 under our invoice cost.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Watts, thank you for testifying. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Going back to an earlier comment to talk about a fair playing field, and the comment was made about witch hunting. Do you have any explanation of that? Why would anyone feel that there was a witch hunt? And is that a danger that you face as a pharmacist? Could you be badly treated? Why the person even said witch hunt?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens. I guess I can't say for sure the words, but what their meaning was. But when we get this MAC pricing is a very good example. When they give us these prices that are unattainable, it's a slow bleed. We're going to go out of business doing that. When they're auditing practices, we had an audit in which our computer rounded from 84 to 83 days. The insurance plan, or the PBM, excuse me, took the entire amount of that prescription back. The right person got the right drug from the right doctor. Those are what I would feel would be.
Senator
Steve.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Watts, for testifying. I'd like to invite Jason Tapley to the microphone here in Juneau and welcome Barbara Huff-Tuckness. Please identify yourself for the record, affiliation, and then please provide your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Barbara Huff-Tuckness. I'm Director of Governmental and Legislative Affairs for Teamsters Local 959. Today I'm putting on my Alaska Teamster Employer Service Corporation hat and testifying on behalf of Denny Castillo, who is our administrator. I would like to go on record, as we have over the years, in opposition to 240, but we've had concerns about this legislation for quite a long time. Specifically, we do have a letter of opposition in the file, and I'm not going to read that into the record. Hopefully, everybody's had an opportunity to review that. We're not here to testify against the pharmacist. That's not our concern at all. I guess you'd call us the middleman. We do hire PBMs, and their job specifically is to reduce cost. We're looking at over $1 million in pharmaceutical costs under our health and welfare plan. If we cannot cover those costs, then we're looking at reducing benefits for members out there, unfortunately. So the concern for us is very simple under this bill. We want to make sure that our PBM has the ability, whoever it is, currently it's Optum Rx. We go out to rebid if our PBM is not making the kind of money or reducing the kind of costs that we believe should happen under our health and welfare trust, then we go out for rebid for another PBM. That's just part, unfortunately or fortunately, part of the process. For us, it is about reduction of cost. And we're more than willing to work with the local pharmacists, with the big pharmacy companies, whoever it is that does help us in the long run control those costs so that we can continue to provide health benefits and prescription coverage for our members out there. So we just wanted to go on record specifically addressing the audit. We want to make sure, as you're considering this legislation, that the PBMs that are hired, that we and many of us out there, whether it's the state of Alaska or any of the other Teamster Union trusts out there for that matter, or any employers, that the auditing process through this legislation is not negatively impacted and our PBMs are able to continue to do their job. If you read through our letter, there's been a lot of changes in the auditing process over the years, and hopefully some of that consideration. It's not like they're actually going on the job site, or at least that's what Ms. Castillo has shared with me. There's a lot more telephone communication or even going through the computer process. So hopefully, as the committee is looking at this legislation, the auditing issue, at least from our perspective, is considered. Thank you.
Are there questions from committee members? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Huff-Tuck, one of your statements has been, or the theme that you've had, is you're trying to get the reduction of costs down. According to what I'm seeing within the healthcare community and the healthcare concerns as we as policymakers, is that those efforts are not being rewarded with any results. In fact, healthcare costs are going up in such an alarming manner that it's causing people that are under Medicaid and those kind of things to not being able to benefit from that. And I'll give you an example. Where I come from on this, recently I called out for a prescription to one of the local pharmacies here in Juneau, and ordered a drug that's been on the market for 25 years. So I'm assuming generics are out there. They were charging, when the person went to pick them up, he was told that they were, he said, the number was he was going to be charged. He asked, how much does it cost? They said $17.50. Okay, I got $17.50 right here. I'll pay for it with a $20 bill. He said, oh, no. That's $1,750. It was almost $100 a pill for that to happen. And I find that revolting, that a drug like that, that's fairly common, maybe not absolutely necessary, but they've got people out there that are charging those kind of exorbitant rates. And so I guess the idea that I have is this reduction of cost efforts that are being out there by what some people are calling within the industry. I guess they don't see the results. That's only a comment, Madam Chair. It was merely a question.
Thank you. Are there questions for Ms. Hopness? Thank you for testifying.
Thank you.
Excuse me. The next person to testify here in Juneau is Jason Tapley, followed by Catherine Kowalski. Mr. Tapley, welcome to Senate Finance. Your name for the record, any affiliation, and then please proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Thank you for hearing my testimony. For the record, my name is Jason Tapley, and I'm a pharmacist at Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium in Juneau. Thank you all for hearing the testimony today. I just wanted to give a couple examples for Senator Von Imhoff. The earlier point was brought up about the pharmacies being able to negotiate the contracts. I just wanted to give you a couple examples. So what we see when we run some claims for our patients, which we're mostly native beneficiaries in Alaska, so we don't see as much insurance as some of the independents like Mr. Watts, but we have PBMs that will limit patients' prescriptions to 30-day supply or 90-day supply, or they make them do mail order. And I can't think of any pharmacy, if they had the power to negotiate a contract with the PBM, would require that their patients have to get their prescriptions sent to them via mail from some company outside the state of Alaska. So those are a couple of things that PBMs do, and that the pharmacist in the end that's filling a prescription for the patient in front of them, that's what they see, are these restrictions. So maybe that makes a little bit more sense to things that actually happen in an everyday format and affect our patients. One other brief point that I just wanted to make was pertaining to patients filling prescriptions off their insurance benefit. And the previous speaker with Express Scripts did make a valid point that that wouldn't go towards their deductible. Unfortunately, there are a lot of folks who are under 65 in this country, people's brothers, sisters, you know, parents. They don't yet have Medicare, which is getting better. The loopholes are closing, and there's less out-of-pocket costs for folks on Medicare D, but they have private insurance, and maybe they have a high deductible plan. So say they're getting one blood pressure medication every month, they're on it for 12 months, and their deductible is $1,500 or something. So they're going to put part of that cost each month they pick up their prescriptions plus the cost of the prescription. So it could, you know, just arbitrary number, it could be $50 to $75 a month for this patient to get this medication on their insurance. It's a generic, it's not a brand name. And then say before I worked for Rite Aid outside the state, but we had a store plan where a lot of prescriptions were at a certain cost. And so if I, this kind of gets back to the gag order thing too, if I was able to tell them, you know, you don't have to get this on your insurance, you can get it on our store plan for $9.99, that would save them, you know, $40 to $60 a month. So over that 12 months, they're not going to hit their deductible with the cost of this one medication, but this would save them several hundred dollars to $1,000 a month just on one medication. So that's one benefit. Another benefit of this legislation in the CAG order would be allow the pharmacist to tell them, this is a better idea for you. You're only on one medication, and you're not going to hit your deductible by the end of the year if you put it all on this. So to save you, bottom line, this would be the better option.
Senator Von Imhoff, do you have a question?
So I understand giving the giving the customer the choice, but then we're also making an assumption that the customer's not going to meet his deductible in a different way. And just throwing it out, I understand and respect your example, and I think it's important, first of all, to give the customer the choice. And it will be up to him or hers decision based on whether they want to take that risk. Because if they get into an accident or something along that line, maybe that extra $200 to $300 before they meet their deductible could be material to them. So, but I respect and thank you very much for providing those examples.
Thank you for Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Tapley, I guess how does it, since you're a good example as a native beneficiary myself, how is it going to affect me and somebody like me that's trying to get my prescription? Is there a direct effect or not?
So with this, this would help the pharmacy that you're getting a prescription at. So with this legislation, we would, in your case, the gag order doesn't really apply because we're going to get you the best price anyways, which is understood. But this would help the pharmacy that you're filling it at, because if we were to be audited by any of the insurance companies that are providing benefits to someone else that's being seen in our clinic, then those audits could remove money and dollars that we could be putting towards purchasing medications that we're going to give to you or give to somebody else who's uninsured. So it would affect you
in that
regard. I am in favor of the bill, strongly in favor.
No further questions.
The next person waiting to testify is Catherine Kowalski from Petersburg, followed by Jerry Brown. Catherine Kowalski, welcome to Senate Finance.
Thank you. Good morning. For the record, my name is Catherine Kowalski, and I'm a pharmacist here in Petersburg. I am here to represent myself, and I'm in support of House Bill 240. I would like to thank Representative Guttenberg and Senator Giesel and everyone else who's worked hard and tirelessly to get us here today. Madam Chair and committee members, thank you for this opportunity to testify on behalf of House Bill 240. I am a second-generation pharmacist and also an Alaska businesswoman trying to preserve a family's legacy that was started by my late father nearly 50 years ago. Along with my sister and business partner, who is also a pharmacist, and also our supportive staff and family here in Petersburg, we hope to remain here on Main Street serving this community as long as possible. We feel we provide a valuable healthcare service, and especially in these areas that are so challenged by access. Recently, after nearly 15 years of being active in my local chamber of commerce, I chose not to rerun for a usual board position. Why? The reason why is because my business can no longer afford to operate effectively without some type of PBM regulation or legislation. Swapping time from chamber activities to testifying before this committee doesn't pay any better. I just had to do it. It had to be a priority, just like it is with the rest of the pharmacists in the state. It's like the old saying goes, you know, if you're not at the table, then you're on the menu. Over the last 10 years, I have watched similar bills to House Bill 240 never make it to fruition. Over the last 10 years, I've watched prescription drug prices increase as PBMs become stronger than ever. And over the past 10 years, I have lost ground to good contracts, unanswered appeals, unfair pricing strategies, and loss of customers through mandatory mail order operations. The stakes are high on my side, as well as other pharmacies across Alaska. House Bill 240 will provide boundaries through fair and accountable legislation. You know, it's by no accident or coincidence that bills of the past, like House Bill 240, did not pass these legislative bodies. Just as the stakes are high on our pharmacies' sides, the stakes are higher on the PBMs. The only problem is, without PBM transparency, we just don't know how high. The PBMs will tell you that legislation through the Division of Insurance will increase costs. But the reality is, over 40 other states have passed similar legislation, and to my knowledge, we have seen no repeals. It is unfortunate that PBMs will tell you that they want to work with us. We wouldn't be here today if this were the case. No one instinctively wants regulation, but there is a time and a place for everything, and it is now for PBM legislation in Alaska. I have always hoped PBMs might have reached out just once or called or even stopped by, but that just hasn't happened in recent memory. In closing, I just think House Bill 240 is good for Alaska. You know, perhaps we can have third-generation pharmacists with hope to come back here and serve these very underserved areas in Alaska. Thank you for your time. I'm open for questions.
Thank you for testifying before Senate Finance, Ms. Kowalski. The next person waiting to testify is Jerry Brown, followed by Tom Hodel. Mr. Brown, welcome to Senate Finance.
Thank you. My name is Jerry Brown. My wife and I own a medical center pharmacy in Fairbanks. We're an independent pharmacy owners. Our pharmacy is now celebrating 51 years within the state of Alaska as an independent pharmacy. As you well know, government's purpose is to provide infrastructure and common sideboards for industry and their activities and behavior within the state of Alaska. House Bill 240 goes a long way to helping to address where there are no sideboards currently within the state of Alaska for pharmacies and PBMs. This is a limited bill. It does not address all ills, as was the discussion here today before you this morning. Some of the things that were brought up by some of the PBMs are way beyond the scope of this particular bill and may need to be addressed in future legislation. This bill simply addressed the audit conduct of PBMs, MAC pricing, and registering of PBMs within the state of Alaska. These are just some of the things that are there. We find that MAC pricing is basically when MAC pricing is below the cost of acquisition by the pharmacies, it creates a negative revenue. That negative revenue in the case of my store has been one out of every four prescriptions in the year 2017, the last year. It represented over $33,000 in negative revenue to us. Negative revenue is basically theft of dollars from local Alaska businesses. And it may be more than that from other businesses, but this is a legalized theft of profit from the Alaska businesses by the PBMs. These MAC prices are arbitrarily set for various PBMs, for various plans, but because they are set that way, they create this negative drain on revenue, and it affects the life of the business and the existence of the business. Currently, TRICARE, for instance, we lose 10 to 15% on every inhaler that is processed through the PBM at this time because of the way they are setting some of their prices. This price is set by the PBM. It is not set by the pharmacy. The prices of the PBMs are essentially, remember, about 30 to 60% when through the chair to Senator Olson to answer his question. The price of the medication is really determined by the PBM, realizing that that price, 30 to 60% of that, is a rebate that the PBM eventually gets on the back side of the prescription. So that those rebates are non-transparent, undisclosed contracts, and is beyond the scope of this particular discussion. But this addresses why the price of prescriptions are the way they are. This needs to be addressed on the federal congressional level, and again, is beyond the scope of this particular piece of legislation. I stand by for any questions that you might have. Thank you very much. I hope for the passage of this bill.
Thank you for those comments, Mr. Brown. Are there questions from committee members? The next person waiting to testify is Mr. Tom Hodel, followed by Tom Wadsworth. Mr. Hodel, welcome to Senate Finance. Your name for the record and any affiliation.
Hi, for the record, my name is Tom Hodel. I'm calling in from Soldotna. Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members, and thank you for this opportunity to speak. I am asking for your support in the passage of House Bill 240. I owned and operated Soldotna Professional Pharmacy for 30 years. I retired and sold our business 4 years ago. A big part of the reason I retired was continued dealing with the unfair auditing practices of the PBMs, along with the ever-decreasing reimbursements. The time and energy spent from pharmacy staff in handling these audit requests took away from our patient care. We had many audits over the years that showed everything was fine and we owed nothing, and rarely even got a thank you for our time and effort from the PBM. The last few years before retirement, I was very active with the Pharmacy Association and getting the audit bill through back then. I'm shocked and surprised that this fight continues. Nearly every state in the U.S. has passed an audit bill, and why the PBMs hold on to Alaska so hard is beyond me. This bill is very important to the future of the independent pharmacy in Alaska, and I truly ask for your support in passing HB 240. Thank you so much for your time.
Mr. Hodel, thank you for testifying before Senate Finance and waiting for over an hour to be able to provide those comments. The next person to testify is Tom Wadsworth, followed by Justin Ruffridge. Mr. Wadsworth, welcome to Senate Finance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Tom Wadsworth. I am the Assistant Dean for Alaska Programs here at the UAA-ISU Doctor of Pharmacy Program located here in Anchorage. My remarks today do not reflect any of the position of the University of Alaska Anchorage or the program in and of itself. I speak today as a pharmacist. I've been a pharmacist for 15 years, having worked in Alaska 8 of those 15 years, and in health services in Fairbanks and also in Bethel, and many of the local pharmacies in Fairbanks and chain stores in Fairbanks. I want to express my support for HB 240. This is a long time coming. And I want to specifically echo the remarks of my colleagues, esteemed colleagues, particularly those who are independent owners across the state. But I want to add something that hasn't been added, the point of view of an educator. I've been educating pharmacists for 11 years. The program here in Alaska has been in operation for 3 years, and our program is the only program that's based here in Alaska. All of the education will occur here in Alaska, and our mantra is that We want to train Alaskans in Alaska for Alaska jobs. Up to this point, 100% of all pharmacists that operate in the state were trained outside of the state. Part of the reason that we're here is so that we can place these highly educated, competent professionals into the rural underserved areas of our state who have long been underserved. And the number one barrier to that occurring at this point, from an academic point of view, is the sustainability of businesses in those rural areas because of the reimbursement strategies that have been in place for such a long time. PBMs have been allowed to operate under the radar in the state for a long time. And some of the testimony that you've heard from PBMs, I think, have been disingenuous at best. They discreetly profit off of backroom tactics that they will not disclose to you. That includes engaging in spread pricing, where it looks like they're saving money to the insurance, but in actuality, they're taking it from the pharmacy. Negotiating and keeping manufacturer drug rebates, requiring patient copay clawbacks, where they actually take that back from the pharmacy that goes unheard or unseen from the patient's point of view, but also from the insurer's point of view. Reimbursing those community pharmacies below their acquisition costs, which you've heard so much about. PBMs are also allowed to expel pharmacies from their network for any time. One of the questions I heard during the testimony was, who enforces these rules? The PBMs do. The PBMs enforce them. Pharmacies can be expelled for breaking a rule for no reason at all, or breaking a rule with no explanation at all, or no recourse, and the stakes are quite high when that happens because they stand to lose contracts with those PBMs, which will then lose access of those patients to their pharmacy. And these practices, which I will say are legal currently in this state, have diminished patient access, often by pushing small business pharmacies to the brink, and you've heard to the brink of closure, and you've heard some of that. And right now, the students who are interested here, and I mentor all of them, our doctor of pharmacy students that are interested in going into the rural areas and opening up their own businesses, they hear these things and they see these things happening. And I can tell you there's no good answer for them if these reimbursement strategies don't change. Sustainability of businesses in the rural areas in Alaska is not possible. It just is not possible. Pharmacists do so much more in the communities when they're physically present there that a mail order pharmacy can never do, that often large chain stores can never do. Pharmacists are local community leaders. These are highly trained, highly competent doctors of pharmacy. They're employers. They're advocates for patients. They support local health providers who are often out in these rural areas on their own with no local support. Pharmacists team up with those providers and provide valuable services in providing health care in a wide range of areas that is otherwise not possible without the physical presence of a pharmacist. They also promote local commerce and local economics or the local economy. Since passage of a law in June of 2015 that have allowed pharmacists to independently prescribe and immunize patients, we've seen immunization rates begin to rise in some of these underserved communities. What I want to emphasize is that the independent community pharmacies only make money when they sell a medication. They are not reimbursed for cognitive services that they provide to healthcare providers in their area or even to patients when they come to them with issues that can be addressed with over-the-counter issues or any other higher advanced medication management strategies that pharmacists implement in their communities.
Mr.
They
Wadsworth?
Do not get reimbursed for those. That's why this is such high.
The next person waiting to testify is Justin Ruffridge. Justin, are you available online?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you to the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you guys today. My name for the record is Justin Ruffridge. I currently own and operate Soldotna Professional Pharmacy and the Juno Drug Company. After graduation in 2008, I moved back to my home state to work in this independent pharmacy in Soldotna. And honestly, it's been a joy to be an integral part of our healthcare community, both on the peninsula and in Juneau. I will say that the group that has been speaking with you today represents a large percentage of our independent pharmacies that operate in Alaska. We are a unique and eclectic group of people, but one thing is the same amongst all of us. We are involved people and involved businesses in our community. For example, we work closely with our law enforcement and the DEA to organize drug take-back events. We immunize against flu, pneumonia, and other community-acquired bacteria. We spend time counseling, consoling people who just want to make their loved ones comfortable at home on hospice care. We deliver medications to those who can't drive. We ensure that taking medications is a safe process without interactions or allergies. And we do all this and more as free services to our community because that's what pharmacy has always been about. However, when listening to some of the testimony today, I've been shocked to hear words come out, words like collusion or that this would be causing confusion for pharmacies and pharmacists or cause conflicts amongst the pharmacy community with the Division of Insurance. In reading through this bill, I see none of those things as possibilities. The idea that transparency would lead to collusion is a stretch at best. The fact that we as highly educated, highly involved community members would ever be confused about our role or about what we do to help our patients have the best care at the lowest cost possible to them is again another shocking idea. And finally, to say that we would cause conflicts amongst the community is not our intention. The MAC pricing appeal would still go on the exact way that it happens right now, which we would submit an appeal and hope that our voice was heard. Right now, that voice is often not heard, and we have no way to go about rectifying that issue. This creates a path for us. It creates reasonable ways by which we can have our voices heard. Another concept that has been coming out is the idea of proprietary algorithms that create MAC pricing. Unfortunately for me, when I hear proprietary, what I equate that with is arbitrary. Transparency would actually give light to the fact that these numbers are in often cases created out of thin air. Lastly, one of the testifiers talked about reducing cost to the overall community of health insurers. And that is an accurate statement, but the question that this bill is addressing is at whose expense does those reduced costs come from? I can guarantee you that as the number 7 on the Fortune 500 list of that is CVS Caremark, the reductions in costs are not coming at their expense. They're coming, as you've heard from other pharmacies and pharmacists, they're coming at our expense. There are other ways to reduce costs in the healthcare community, and I don't think this is our first legislation. I think we'll be seeing more. And in your packet, you see where the dollars are going.
Mr. Ruffridge, your time was up some time ago. Could you close?
Yes. In closing, loss of local business is bad for our state economy, bad for our community, and bad for our practice of pharmacy, and I urge you to consider this putting legislation in place to protect our local pharmacies, and I thank you for your time, and I will be available for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Ruffridge. Are there questions from committee members? Is there anyone else here in Juneau, off-net or online, wishing to testify on House Bill 240? If you could approach the microphone, identify yourself for the record. We have a floor session at 11 o'clock.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Laurie Morton. I live in Senate District Q. I've taken time off work, and I'm representing myself. Sorry for not signing up. I didn't intend to come over today. I am usually a level-headed person, and I think those of you who know me know that I don't get angry easily, and I work toward compromise. I heard the PBM representative this morning, and I had to come and talk to you. As a consumer of medication, both myself and my husband, both as when I was under Alaska Cares and now with the GGU Union Health Insurance, Caremark does in fact try to mandate you to go to their in-house pharmacy. And they'll say in-house mail service, but it's a pharmacy. They're asking you to buy their drugs at that reduced price. They're actually driving you, or trying to, away from your local pharmacist. When I was in my previous position, I was able to afford to go to my local pharmacy, and I did it purposefully to support local Alaskan economy and businesses. Now in my new job, it's more difficult under reduced financial circumstances to do that, but I continue to do that because it's in a local Alaskan pharmacy. He's my neighbor. He's somebody that we want to be able to keep in business. So I would just say, if they are not being transparent on that one issue, why not just say, this is what I do, right? If they're not being transparent on that issue with you, what else are they being purposely opaque about? And then the second thing I would say, as I was listening to people talk about cost, and it's all about cost, and we have to save cost, there's more than money costs. There are values, and there are trust cost. What is your peace of mind in being able to go and say, hey, John, what are the effects of this prescription? What do I need to know about it? How can I best take it and integrate it into my life and other things that I am doing? There is confidence costs. Do I trust the person that is helping me understand how all these medications interact with each other? I can get a live person when I go to Ron's Apothecary. It's more difficult to do that by mail order with these huge mega companies. So I would just say part of my, and you can tell I am upset, part of that is in the process. I think people, when they come before you, when they become before any committee or body of the legislature, need to be honest about what they're doing. Their intent needs to be clear, and they need to not be trying to use language in a way that gives you a false sense of what they're all about. So sorry that I sort of raised my voice to you, but thank you for listening to me.
Are there questions from committee members? Ms. Morton, thank you for taking time off from your day to join us in Senate Finance. Is there anyone else wishing to testify to Senate Finance today on House Bill 240? Seeing and hearing none, the public hearing is closed. Senator Bishop, could you cover the fiscal note?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members have a statement of zero fiscal impact in their packages. Briefly, the Department of Administration, Department of Commerce, and Insurance Operations, the following agencies request no funding for this legislation for fiscal year 2019 through fiscal year 2024. They anticipate absorbing any increases to workload using existing staff and resources without physical impact. This includes capital and supplemental appropriations. Additionally, no impact to state revenue is projected, and the bill will not result in regulation changes.
Are there questions on the fiscal note? I'd like to ask Lori Winghire to the microphone. I have asked for floor to be delayed for 15 minutes. With your support, I'm ready to move the bill. Ms. Winghire, multiple issues have been raised, questioning fairness, possibly, from the pharmacy benefit manager, why you should interject and have oversight capabilities from the state of Alaska. You've heard the testimony. Please, from both perspectives, both those of our pharmacists and those that are providing pharmacy benefit managers on behalf of plans in our state, please provide the committee your thoughts.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Lori Winghire. I'm the director of the Division of Insurance for the state of Alaska. This is no doubt, it's confusing, it's lengthy, it's an industry that popped up and has tentacles have gone into almost all insured and self-insured and ERISA plans. The first thing I heard in the testimony, I think through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, you ask about the contract, and there's two contracts. So the pharmacy benefit manager would contract with the state of Alaska or a large employer – or with an insurer, with Aetna, Premera. And that's one contract where they are probably absolutely right. The contract terms are negotiated. This is what we want our plan to pay for, much like the insurance policy is. Then the pharmacy benefit manager turns around and negotiates with the pharmacist. We've been told that those contracts, there's not so much give and take. And so when you're talking contracts, there's really two contracts, both with the pharmacy benefit manager as a party to it. So I wanted to clarify that there is more than one. There, no one here in this building wants to do something that inadvertently raises the cost of health care. And I think when, you know, the national average in 2016, for when we look at Alaska, the health care spend was about 15% or more per person. That's something we have been very conscious of, not just in the Division of Insurance, but throughout the state, all employers. So I think that if the costs are going to be raised, we have looked at it. We have looked at how the division will monitor or would look at these appeals. And quite frankly, the division is not going to have these appeals. They're going to go to OHH or the Office of Administrative Hearings. There's a very specific statute that if you want the division to do the appeals, it needs to be listed. And I think I can give it to you if you want to look at it. But it's 4464030. And this particular section was not put in that list. Now, saying that, we have talked to OAH, and we've also talked at length with the state of Washington. The state of Washington, when this bill was passed, they had an analysis done by an outside consultant. And that outside consultant, we have the study, came back and said they expected hundreds of thousands of claims. And Washington invested in a platform so that the claims were submitted electronically and that they could adjudicate, or should say appeals, that the claims could be adjudicated promptly and fairly. Because of the, between the PBM and the pharmacist, there's an organization called a PSAO, or a Pharmacy Service Administrative Organization. Because of the PSAO being involved, for the third quarter last year, Washington saw less than 25 claims or appeals. It has not manifested into what they expected or what their outside analysis proved. We did not think extrapolating from what Washington had in discussion with OAH that we would see enough appeals that warranted a fiscal note. Back to you. So that is why we did not, nor did OAH, submit a fiscal note. And I hope that eases your concerns on that. But we worked very closely in talks with Washington and what their appeal process was, how they handled the implementation of the bill, what they saw for appeals coming forward. And most of them that were settled were for less than $300. They weren't. So we think that perhaps the law itself led to some appeals going back and forth between the PBM, the pharmacist, without having to go to a third party such as OAH.
Are there questions from committee members? Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. So one of the things that I looked at earlier in the bill was, and I asked a question about the auditing standards. Do you know if there's a set of auditing standards or directed standards that everyone understands what is expected in an audit, that everyone can go to the same place to see what those auditing standards are?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, I'm going to assume you mean the audit between the pharmacist and the PBM. And I do not know what the standards are. We have never seen the standards to know if they're standardized between each PBM and each pharmacist or if they vary depending on the size of the pharmacy.
We're getting some heads in the audience shaking that they, if I'm interpreting the head shaking based on the responses from the speaker at the microphone, they're different for each. Their experiences have been different with the criteria that is being measured. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Wingheyer, thank you very much for coming this morning. It's certainly a bill that's got everybody's attention. But in the state of Washington, where they had an approaching $1 billion for these appeal processes that are going on, there is no fiscal note here. How do you justify that in spite of this low numbers that are out there?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, Washington's, their fiscal note, majority of that was spent on the platform that they built to handle these appeals.
I see.
And then in discussion with them, they also hired staff, mm-hmm. but the appeals have just not manifested.
I see. No further questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Other questions from committee members? It is not typical that we don't hold for amendments. Does any member need additional information for preparing or reviewing amendments? We do have Cindy Laubach in the audience. Any questions? Senator Machicki.
Madam Chair, I've spent quite a bit of time on this bill. I am comfortable with the bill moving out of committee today, and I have no need for amendments.
Thank you. Other questions? I would like to see the language. If we could get that sent to my office, I'm happy to share it with the committee members. Senator Bishop, may I have a motion?
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2400, version 30-LS0868/J from committee with the accompanying fiscal notes and committee recommendations.
Is there objection? Seeing and hearing none, the CS for House Bill number 240-J moves from committee with attached fiscal notes and individual committee recommendations. Brief at ease while we sign the paperwork. I'd like to call Senate Finance Committee back to order. On today's this afternoon's agenda, we have House Bill 214, Breeze Law. We do have the public hearing included in that this afternoon. Is there anything else to come before the committee before we adjourn? The bells are ringing. Senator Hoffman, thank you. We're adjourned.